Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
She's smart, she's perky, she's got a big family, and she may take control of America, which actually means me and you, your friends and family, our army and navy and intelligence networks, our economy and prospects of recovery from our drunken drive into an economic ditch. Under the Bush administration, only 4,000 American men and women died, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis due to rabid bad judgment. Judgment matters, and one can pray that in the years ahead, we never see such blindness. Pray, and then vote using the wisdom and instincts for survival that God hath provided. The Sarah Palin survey continues. Stay tuned. Our conversation with Kate Troll, Executive Director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, continues. Do you think she listens?
That's a good question, because sometimes, there's silence on the other end, and it's hard to interpret whether that silence is sincere listening or if it's, okay, thank you, I've listened, but I don't agree with you.
I'm just trying to imagine that if the policies of Governor Palin were to continue in Alaska, what kind of changes might you expect in the future? Because I want the reason I obviously asked that is, what might we expect down in the rest of the states here, following her sort of approach to the environment?
Well, I think that you would see some of the scientific community, their opinions being filtered once again. I mean, we saw that occurring on the science around polar bears. To me, that's disconcerting about that is we saw the previous Bush administration, how they manipulated the science on climate change. And, are we opening ourselves to that type of screening of science to fit what's politically your political agenda of the day? So that's one big red flag that gets raised. And the other thing that I think your listeners need to know about is, she's currently made another statement as a vice presidential candidate that she doesn't see their climate change being man-made. There is not a linkage between climate change and human activity. And this is a time in an era where you've got tremendous scientific consensus. It is probably the most powerful statement of scientific consensus that exists in the world. And if she doesn't get it on that level, then will she really get it on all the other resource science-based questions that get put before her?
That's exactly the problem from my perspective. As far as many people are concerned, it's pretty well settled at this point. And the fact that she's willing to make a statement like that suggests that she's really out of the loop here. She's not in touch with, how the world is beginning to become of one mind and
right,
share our knowledge. Yes.
And she's been on record. She, believes in creationism and would like to see that taught in the schools. While she hasn't advanced that agenda as governor yet, we've seen very clearly that's her belief. So she doesn't accept the science of evolution either. So you clearly, on these two issues, you have someone who is out of step with mainstream scientific thinking.
And as well, it is just basically the Bush kind of agenda moved forward again. And perhaps I thought for a while there we were perhaps making some progress in these realms, and to see a real giant backward step to have to fight those wars again is frightening to me.
And on these sorts of issues, the only difference between Sarah Palin and George Bush is lipstick.
Okay, there you go. Well said. She's very smart, very smart woman, and actually very appealing in some ways. But she also is promoting in Alaska something called the Roads to Resources. That concerns me enormously because, for example, in wilderness areas, et cetera, I'm afraid that she begins to, if she were vice president and and or president, that the whole concept of roads to resources is the mindset that she sees all of the public, in essence, public lands as basically resources to be exploited. Am I right or am I wrong about that?
You're generally right about that. You know, she hasn't been as hard as her predecessor in terms of the Roads to Resources campaign. She actually stopped one of his pioneer roads, but in terms of the aspect of you know, these resources are here for us to consume, and we also know that, you know, that, you know, certainly contributes to our economy, so she does sort of have that kind of attitude about the roads to resources. Mm-hmm. But I'm just, in fairness, trying to put her in the context of her predecessor, and right, she's not as hard over it as he was.
One of her claims is that she has stood up to the oil companies. And, again, this framing issue is the one that most concerns me. I'd love to believe that what we see is what we get, and maybe to some extent that is true. But I do not like people who like to reframe things to make a point but aren't being accurate. One of those is that she stood up to the Bush administration concerning the listing of polar bears, suggesting that the Bush administration was the story that she wants to present is that here was the Bush administration clamoring and pounding on people to make sure that the polar bear was listed as an endangered species, and somehow she stood up to them. And, you know, I don't ever remember hearing George Bush say that was something that was very important or on his agenda. So this concept that she's standing up to the Bush administration, in reality, what she's doing is standing up to certain environmental decisions that finally were made in the Department of Interior to actually follow through with what otherwise had been endangered species legislation. That's disingenuous, isn't it?
It's very disingenuous, yeah, because, I mean, she's standing up to the Bush administration to push the oil and gas agenda when it comes to the polar bear listing.
Right.
And, I mean, Secretary Kempthorne tried to, you know, walk that fine line between recognizing the science that he was getting from the USGS, mm-hmm, and which basically acknowledges that it's the loss of habitat, being sea ice, which will cause this precipitous decline in polar bears. But at the same time, you know, the interactions of the oil and gas industry were sort of de minimis by compared to the effect of climate change. So he tried to issue a ruling that would allow some operations to still go forward, but, you know, but he really clearly made the case that, you know, climate change is causing the habitat, and that's where I think, you know, Governor Palin kind of got on the wrong side of things, because she doesn't really see the whole connection, human activity and climate change, and, you know, doesn't want to see these listings as a way to address climate change.
One of the areas that, again, concerns me is the fact that she seems to be so willing to promote almost any sort of extractive industry. And I oftentimes think that when we say oil and gas, we kind of, you know, suggest that they're the evildoers in some cases, but it's really the extractive industries, mining being one, and that some of her decisions have concerning, for example, gold mines, massive gold mines in Alaska. She doesn't seem to see the correlation between some of the potential very dangerous environmental impacts from gold mining, and I've had to face that face forward when I was in New Mexico. Tell us about how she's kind of softening the rules there.
Well, actually, she didn't soften the rules so much as the fact that her predecessor softened the rules, and she's only sort of reinstated, you know, one of the three dismantlings that he undertook. I think what a lot of people were really concerned about was, you know, she personally came out in support or in opposition of what we call a Clean Water Initiative, which would have put a requirement that large mines, meaning 640 acres or larger, you know, would have to demonstrate that they could, you know, not discharge of any toxic pollutions into salmon streams. So that was real, you know, surprising and I think telling, I should say, of where she leans when she came out in opposition of the Clean Water Initiative. We have asked her administration to close what we call the toxic loophole in the mixing zone legislation. And we currently, her predecessor, made a change to the water quality standards that allows you to have mixing zones, and mixing zones are where you can temporarily exceed the water quality standards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we used to have this flat ban on no mixing zones in salmon streams whatsoever. And then they modified it to say, well, wait a minute, only no mixing zones when salmon are present. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as if the habitat isn't year-round. And so we've been requesting and trying to get her administration to close that toxic loophole. That hasn't happened. So we weren't getting support there. And then just very recently, Governor Palin came out in opposition to the Clean Water Initiative, which would have focused on that very issue, but for large mines. So she definitely has tilted the fact that she's there to support mining.
You know, I really try to be fair. I try to be objective, and at least that's what I claim about myself. Okay, I don't know that others claim the same thing, but that's what I talk about. That's how I try to imagine myself. But I'm truly trying to get a handle on Sarah Palin, because it does feel to me as if there's some other agenda here. There's some other reason. This was such a dark horse character that came to serve the mission of John McCain to become president. What, from your perspective, is the truth here? Why is she given this opportunity? Why was she brought forward? Is there another agenda that we really need to be aware of?
Well, I mean, I think she was brought forward to enhance John McCain's electability, pure and simple. She really wasn't brought forward because she had a depth of a resume and experience to bring, and that she had a particular vision that we all needed to be enlightened about. As you noticed, you know, she really energized the conservative, the far-right base of the Republican Party that John McCain was having difficulty reaching to. And there are also, you know, the issue of women running for high office certainly was out there in this election season, and to try and one up and reestablish his maverick image is why I think we have Sarah Palin. We have her there for image and not for substance.
And I totally agree. All of those are absolutely correct. I guess my concern is that there is something hidden here, which actually is this environmental agenda that needs to really be brought forward. It does seem to me as if, in her role as vice president, that she can become an extraordinary advocate, perhaps a very effective advocate for all the things that we've been talking about. And that is a huge reason why she was brought in.
That's the reason why we're having this interview, because I think, you know, particularly on the issues of climate change and energy, it's very foreboding to have someone of her stature be considered as vice president. And, you know, the good thing she does bring to the whole debate is that she makes it a very clear choice. If you are at all concerned about the environment, you now have a really black and white choice. There's no more shades of gray, because, you know, McCain kind of, you know, has done a little bit of things. He did support, you know, some, you know, author some climate change legislation, although he's not pushing it to the degree that we'd like to see him. But, you know, But she sort of takes those shades of grays out, and you've got a real clear choice if you want a pro-environment candidate. It's the Obama-Biden ticket.
I have already endorsed Mr. Obama on the show here, and Biden. I think it's a great opportunity for America to move forward on its own right, but as well into the world, and just reestablish some really dangerously broken relationships.
You know, energy is the subtext of a lot of the issues that we face today in our economy. And when you have candidates that have an aggressive agenda toward transitioning us to a clean energy future that get the connection on climate change, you're going to be in a better position to renew and restore our economy. So, you know, I easily make that link. You know, if you are going to want to support, you know, a pro-environment, pro-economy agenda, and in my mind, those two things always sort of go hand in hand. In particular, we know that up here in Alaska, since a lot of our resource economy is resource driven. So I take a perspective of, you know, who's really going to be good for the environment tends to be if they have the right vision, the one that's also going to be the best candidate for the economy.
Couldn't agree with you more. We can literally change this country, create millions of jobs, revitalize myriads of technologies, interlocking and with the right leadership and vision, using the old bully pulpit to unite all of this effort, we could get this job done. I do believe we could become essentially energy independent in 10 years.
We should be leaders in the energy revolution.
Well, we certainly should, because you know why? We can, because otherwise everyone else is going to surpass us just from the perspective of technology. That scares me. It concerns me. Why we're put in this position over silly issues, particularly as it relates to serving perhaps the extractive industries, I'll call it. We're shooting ourselves in the head on that one. You're absolutely right. That is my concern. You know, and one of the challenges for we who refer to ourselves as environmentalists is the fact that I just heard actually Newt Gingrich this morning speaking to a group in St. Paul. I didn't know this, but he was the guy who came up with the phrase drill, 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 that vision. And I've commented any number of times in the last number of shows here how I've been appalled at how in essence, the environmental community has been co-opted by this mantra because it relates to energy independence. One of my big issues about the drill, drill, drill campaign, a lot of people are just responding to it in a positive way, which is frightening. And that is the fact that it doesn't seem as if our side, quote unquote, is making the message loudly and clearly enough that what they're really saying is, and they do say it on occasion, drill anywhere. And I think that's an important thing to really bring to the table, because it's been kind of cloaked in the idea that it's about offshore drilling, but that's only part of the story. And it really is about drilling everywhere or anywhere. And certainly in areas of the West, or if you look into Kentucky and Tennessee, where we're removing whole mountaintops to get to coal, this vision becomes pretty devastating. So I'm just curious what your thoughts may be about the balance between this concept of drill, drill, drill offshore versus everybody's backyard.
I agree with you in that the way they're presenting it is that every fossil fuel resource in your backyard is now going to be looked at as accessible. You know, we have to achieve energy independence at any and all risk. And there is a misperception that it's just readily available, you know. I mean, you know, there's a whole exploration development. I mean, it's not like if we've aggressively started, drilling all the leases that the oil companies currently have, it's still not going to address our price of gasoline till 10, 20 years away. So there's this total misperception that drilling is going to solve the price at the gas pump. It's not at all.
It's a total misapplication of reality.
And I want to come back to the fact that it also overlooks the fact that the cheapest megawatt is a negawatt, if you will, and that's a negawatt is the watt of energy you don't have to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have, our electrical utilities running at 55% efficiency, there is the low-hanging fruit. Raising the standards for higher fuel efficiency is one way of making your dollars for gas go further. There are just so many more practical solutions. Up here in the state of Alaska, for example, one of the bridges, which Governor Palin still supports, is the bridge across the Kinnick Arm, as a way to access Wasilla, her hometown. Well, a commuter rail makes a whole lot more sense from the big energy picture.
Is this breaking news?
There's two bridges to nowhere.
Well, okay. Let's be specific, because I hadn't heard this story.
Okay, well, here's the deal in that there were two bridges to nowhere. One was the one in Ketchikan, which, by the way, she supported when she ran for governor.
Yeah, that's on that 2006 debate, yes.
Right. And then the second one is the Kinnick Arm Bridge that leaves Anchorage and accesses undeveloped wetlands near her hometown of Wasilla. That project has not been canceled, and she still has $100 million federal dollars of the formerly earmarked dollars are still dedicated to the proposed Kinnick Arm Bridge.
How do you spell that, by the way?
Kinnick, K-N-I-K, Arm. Kinnick Arm Bridge.
Okay. Uh-huh. Haven't heard a word about that.
Yeah.
Well, this is a first time.
It opens up land for development on the across the inlet from Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would make it a slightly shorter drive from Wasilla to Anchorage.
We're talking with Kate Troll, who's the executive director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, and thank you so much. Bottom line for me is the fact that we have an opportunity here to move forward right
now.
And
not backwards.
That's exactly correct. In every sense of the word, in terms of our vision, in terms of our commitment, in terms of our coming together, in terms of technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It feels to me as if the Palin presence on the ticket here would be a giant step backwards. It would be stupid for us to have to fight these wars again. That's my take. What is yours?
Oh, I agree that it's a step backwards. I mean, we really need to elect people that have a comprehensive view of the energy revolution. And also, in today's world, we have to think about sustainability of our resources and not just be on the resource extraction train wagon. You know, it doesn't mean we can't have resource-based industries, but it needs to be balanced out. We need to be on target for leading the way for a sustainable Earth and not moving backwards from that. And the Obama-Biden ticket is the ticket that takes us forward. And the McCain-Palin ticket now presents a stark contrast for voters.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that encourages me is that these new technologies can be ramped up so quickly and result in energy and other technologies very quickly put people back to work.
I've seen studies that show that on a per-dollar basis, for you know, every dollar you spend on renewable energy, it creates three times more the number of jobs that it would create in the oil and gas industry.
We're talking with Kate Troll. I want to thank you so much. If a person were to frame this argument, is there an easy way to frame this such that it can penetrate more efficiently into the American mindset right now?
Yep, and that's what I said earlier. The only difference between Sarah Palin and George Bush on these issues is lipstick.
Kate Troll, Executive Director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, a perfect way to end this conversation. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
As it turns out, there are lots of people who know Sarah Palin. And we will continue our quest into who she is and what could be the consequences of a potential Palin presidency. We are at a point in America and the world where we either unite to create an intelligent design for our future, or we may pay the ultimate price of our ignorance. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Tuesday, or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth rings out around the world, here on the Wild Side News.
He talked to his team of huskies as he mushed on through the snow, with the northern lights a-running wild in the land of the midnight sun. Yes, Sam McCord was a mighty man in the year of the mountain.